each move of the hand or leg, they just got heavier and heavier. And pretty soon I'm dizzy, but I'm laying on my stomach, so I'm not worried about falling. And I get out to the point, my hands are shaking so bad I couldn't have done anything anyway. The bottom bluff, there was one called the Rue Swamp. I searched around this area in the rocks. Your GPS really isn't working real well. Rutting around, and I said, well, I'm going to take one more pass. And I turn around and I go to step, and something didn't look right. And I look a little closer, and my foot's about 6 inches from stepping on a cottonmouth. Stop, and I turn to the left, and there's another one right there. And I turn to the right, and there's another one there, and I'm thinking, this isn't good. All I can see is their white mouth, them looking up at me like, you don't belong here. That's when I decided that caches are guarded by serpents. I don't find them. There wasn't one behind me, so I just kind of backed out and said, that cache will remain unfound.
2,000, 3,000, 4,000, and now we're coming up to 5,000.
I was really ready to move on to something else. Mm-hmm. You know, to be at the top level requires you to really spend nothing else but doing caching. And if you want to stay in that top two or three in the country, it requires you to do caching that I didn't enjoy doing. I don't enjoy chasing around micros in a city. I said as early as first geocaching Woodstock, the best thing that could happen to geocaching is you can't put a cache in unless one comes out. I felt at that time there was already too many caches. Now there's probably 200,000 more than there was at that time across the world. I remember when I found my first 1,000 cache, and I was only the second person in the world to ever do that. People were wondering, you know, if I need a new pair of boots. Now, to go find 1,000 caches, people might wonder if you need a new brake pedal on your car. Because at that time, 1,000 caches, you'd probably walk 500 miles. And it went from a walking hobby to a driving hobby. Even though I used to drive 200-400 miles, and that was just to get from
where you lived to the first cache.
That's right. That's when things changed.
I found your name on a website called waywardwaymarking.com.
Wayward Waymarking, that's a site that's just kind of a helper site to waymarking. It's got a lot of the FAQ type information. Even if I'm not out looking for them, I'm either doing research for future ones or doing research for ones that I've already gone out and taken pictures of, but I don't have anything to write up on them yet.
May of 2007 on the waywardwaymarking.com, you were featured Waymark Finder. They asked you something about what was your waymark you were most proud of. You had mentioned it hasn't been posted yet, and that was back in 2007. Have you found your waymark that you're most proud of yet?
It was actually a wind harp. There aren't very many wind harps around, and there happens to be one in Warrensburg, Missouri, and I happened to track it down. It used to actually be at the Science Center in St. Louis and then got moved out there.
Do you find when you're out looking for waymarks, you have less to explain to muggles than you did when you were geocaching?
The hardest ones for me to take pictures of are the commercial ones. You know, why would anybody want to take a picture of a Denny's restaurant? Whereas if you're taking a photo of an old building or a sculpture, well, that's just what people do. Caching, you run a query and you go out and find caches hidden in the woods. With waymarking, I can spend a day taking photos, and it might take me months to get them all written up.
When you do some of the fact-checking, do you actually call people up, or is it basically all online research or go to the library?
Online research. Sometimes I make a phone call or two if something that I think I can get better information by giving somebody a call. When it comes to sculptures, I have certain websites I know I can go and get information. And when it comes to some monument, I know that there are certain websites that I can just go into that will probably have information.
Did you discover waymarking when you were in Nebraska?
Yeah, I was in Lincoln, and I had some time to kill, and I said, well, why don't I try this out? Now I have over 5,000 waymarks, basically from Florida to Washington State, you Canadian provinces. And
the twist on waymarking is that with geocaching, you're given coordinates, and you go find something. Here you go find something, and you get the coordinates?
There's two sides of it. We were given a category, go find it. But then the other side is, you know, the visiting element of it. First part, it would be similar in a way to the old locationalist caches work. You know, you were given in something to go find, and you found it and listed the coordinates. Once you list it, it becomes basically the same as like a virtual cache. If you ever go to the waymarking site, just hit St. Louis and you'll see. I have a few thousand there. I didn't mention it, but I do have 5,000 waymarks. I hit 5,000 a couple weeks ago. There's a guy from Brazil that has 4,000. We've stayed 1,100 apart for about a year. I don't know if there's anybody that's over 3,000 besides him.
Well, thanks again, Bruce.
Hey, you take it easy.
September of 2006 was my 1 week, one person geocaching trip to Arkansas. I recorded audio of my cache hunts in the rain and interviewed a few prominent geocachers along the way. The results could be heard in a series of very short podcasts that I published each evening during the trip.
September 14th, 2006, episode number 36, 2 days before Arkansas adventure.
Had my clothes packed already and waypoints and maps being uploaded to my Garmin eTrex Vista as we speak. I'll probably be heading to Springfield Saturday morning, do some caching through Sullivan, spend a night in Springfield in the back of my truck, spend a couple days in Clarksville, Conway, Little Rock, maybe back up through Mountain Home, and then, boy, a week's gone already. I'll say a few more words every day as the trip progresses.
Okay, I'm here at GCN5XJ, and it is nighttime, and it's Friday in the park. There's a cache 200-some feet away. Put my headlamp on, head back there. What is this? Ammo box. This is located. Oh, I've got to calculate the coordinates. Crap. I've got to get one tonight. This may or may not be it. Number of words in rule number 2. Times 9 plus 475. Where does this take us? Waypoint memory full. Oh my god. Paul doing a night cache in Sullivan. Wasn't meant to be a night cache, but I'm not doing this. I can't do this. This is wrong. I shouldn't be doing this. I'm going to do it. Come on, Mojo. Paul Kanapeki reporting in. I don't know what time it is. I guess 9 times 9 is not 45. It's actually 81. So I got in the area and... woohoo! Here it is. Thank God.
It's 8:30 on Saturday morning. I was able to get 5 hours sleep in the back of my truck at this rest stop just out of Springfield. Slow going this morning, but it's a nice day, a little bit windy.
I caught up on some sleep this morning. Forecast for 70% chance of rain turned out to be 100%. Had to skip many of the planned stops along Route 7 and just head to Russellville. My wildest adventure today was hunting the B-25 crash site cache and the Round Mountain cache. Feet up the side of a hill. I bet you I was supposed to take another trail, but I'm this close, I'm not turning back, so up the hill we go.
B-25 crash site geocache logbook. Wow. Add my scribble to here and then walk back to the car. Okay, this is getting ridiculous. Signing off for now.
The day started with a 30-minute interview with Max Slaughter, a.k.a. Poppy, if Nanny Poppy. We met at his Chevrolet dealership where he is a general manager. Then to Pack Rat Falls Cache, which is rated a 4.5 from Terrain. Very accurate, I may say. Cache in the lobby of the Best Western Motel that Mike, a.k.a. Golf Nuts, runs. I can count that as a fine. Hit dinner at a Mexican restaurant with Nani Poppy, RKL, MBL, and Golf Nuts. Tomorrow, I leave Clarksville, hunt the infamous Glory Hole cache and others nearby it, then plan to spend the night in Conway.
When we started geocaching, there was not a cache in Johnson County, Arkansas. And it is now the most populous cache-dense county in the state.
Wednesday, day 5 of Paul's Arkansas Adventure.
I'm standing here next to the glory hole. It's pretty lonely here. And the trail to get here was down, 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 down. So that's what I had to look forward to on the way back. Didn't bring my hiking pole, stupid me. But hey, I'm here.
Thursday, day 6 of Paul's Arkansas Adventure.
First half of the day was taken up by interview with Wayne Lunsford. Stopped by to visit him on the college campus where he works. I did a few caches in Conway and then headed up to Mountain Home.
The chief of police welcomes geocaching. He said just let him know if there's anything we can do to help us. You've got organizations at both ends of the spectrum. I think MIGO is probably at one end.
Well-oiled machine.
Yes. Very organized, very structured. Mm-hmm. We're probably close to the middle, and then you've got some that are on the other end who, you know, may not even have a website.
Friday, day 7 of Paul's Arkansas Adventure.
In about 10 or 15 minutes, I'm scheduled to meet Cache Crazies at the Mark's Rock Cache.
You know, I've been on the road for days and days and days, and yet I see so many caches bypass me on the map because I just don't have time.
I know what you mean.
I work for District Court,
And what do you do there?
I'm the chief clerk for District Court. I've been there 15 years. District Court, we do criminal and traffic cases, civil and small claims. Okay. The felonies are in the District Court, really bad guys.
The ones we have in the state park, we try to buy things from the state park, gifts, things that has Arkansas State Parks on it. So we're giving to them by buying things to put in the cache from them.
Many of the podcast episodes were introduced by Audrey. I could always count on her to read the script and have the audio ready for when I needed it. Audrey, thank you for your voluntary efforts.
Thank you, Paul. I want to take this opportunity to express my appreciation for allowing me to be a part of the Slager Geocaching podcast. You could have selected any number of personalities to introduce your episodes. You enriched my existence by introducing me to geocaching through your discussions with geocachers and audio recordings at events these past years.
What are your future plans?
I plan to take some time off, travel the world, and then look for my next assignment.
Well, as we have discussed in private, if you decide to do more podcasts here and there in the future, I would like to call on you for assistance.
You know you can count on me.
If you have been a long-time listener of this podcast, you know that I have never asked for donations, I don't hold contests, or host a community forum. All the money for equipment, travel, and time spent on the podcast has come out of my own pocket. That's just the way I've always wanted it. I never want to be beholden to anyone for the quality or content of the podcast. We all have friends or family who may not understand our obsession with geocaching, but put up with us because they care about us. Many times in this podcast, I have mentioned Elaine, my close companion since 1993. In fact, you can hear her voice in an episode every once in a while. She doesn't have an official geocaching.com username. At one time, she was referred to as Miss E, so that's how we all refer to her now. She goes on most geocaching hunts with me, mainly for the exercise and outdoor experience. She used to be the driving navigator, but that role has diminished now that I have a Garmin 60 CSX that does the auto routing for us. She will help find the cache and look through the contents, but never signs the logbook. I would like to thank her for her patience during these past 3 years. She never complained about my late nights in front of the computer, editing audio when I should be sleeping. And thank you, listeners, for allowing me to share these stories and experiences with you. Your emails of encouragement throughout the years reminded me this was a worthwhile adventure. I suspect that I'll still do some type of podcasting in the future, maybe some freelance recordings at geocaching events, and definitely some more videos. But as of this episode, I close the book on the Slog It Geocaching podcast. Please take some time to listen to some of the previous episodes. There are some good stories to be heard. This is Paul Kanopaki. Here's hoping your signal is strong and your bearing is true.
Do you know what longitude, latitude, longitude? Do you know what longitude, latitude mean? Longitude,
latitude,
longitude,
latitude.
Yes, I know what longitude, latitude mean. Latitude is the angular distance measured in degrees. It tells how far from the equator any place happens to be. North or south from the equator, wherever a place may be. Latitude gives the angular distance scientifically. Do you know what longitude, latitude, longitude? Do you know what longitude, latitude mean? Longitude,
latitude,
longitude,
latitude. Yes, I know what longitude.